Most of us have met a Jehovah's Witness on our doorstep at one time or another. More than 8 million witnesses practice this kind of door-to-door ministry all around the world. Well, growing up in Fremont, California, Candace Conti was one of them.
As a kid, I just remember my whole opening spiel was, wouldn't you love to live in a beautiful place like this? There would be no sickness. There would be no death. Your loved ones that have passed away would be brought back to life.
But as Candace grew older, the church she loved so much became an ugly place because of one elder in particular. Now, a new investigation into the Jehovah's Witnesses has uncovered a widespread pattern of child sexual abuse and cover-up by church leaders. Trey Bundy, a reporter for Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting, first started investigating this when a whistleblower sent him a package of policy memos from the Watchtower. That's the Witnesses' global headquarters in New York. All of the memos were clearly marked confidential.
The policy memos instruct the elders that they have to keep these matters confidential, that they're not to announce to the congregation when if they know of a child molester in their midst. They are not allowed to call police or any law enforcement until they've received direction from the Watchtower.
That's a shocking part of your piece. These letters direct church officials throughout the country, don't call the cops, don't tell parents, don't tell anyone until we tell you what to do.
Correct. And they've been sending these memos for about 25 years. The most recent one was issued in November, and it was very clear. It said that elders should form internal judicial committees to deal with criminal matters involving Jehovah's Witnesses. And when they talk about criminal matters, they list a number of crimes, including murder, rape, and child abuse. So the idea is we're going to handle these matters internally. And it says in very specific language, strict confidentiality must be maintained in order to avoid unnecessary entanglements with secular authorities. In other words, we're keeping this quiet.
And as I understand it, there were several Bible passages included in these directives justifying the secrecy in Scripture.
That's right. So all of the memos contain Bible passages to emphasize the policy. So, for instance, there's a part of the policy is that if a child comes to an elder claiming that someone in the congregation had abused them, if that child doesn't have another witness to the abuse, then the elders won't investigate it. And that comes from Deuteronomy, where it says something to the effect of, let no single man rise up against another man at the mouth of two or three witnesses, the matter should stand good. So the idea is, if there aren't two witnesses to an act of child abuse, they don't deal with it.
So Trey Bundy, let's flash forward a little bit to a specific case that's at the heart of your piece. Who is Candace Conti?
Candace Conti is a woman who grew up in the Jehovah's Witness organization in Fremont, California. So in the early 90s, she was attending the congregation there with a man named Jonathan Kendrick, who was also a witness. She claims that Jonathan, for about 2 years when she was 9 or 10 years old, was abusing her. They would go out together preaching door-to-door Bible literature, and he would use those opportunities to take her to his house and sexually abuse her. So she didn't say anything about it for years to anybody. But one day in 2009, she found Kendrick on a sex offender website and realized that he had gone on after her to molest another girl. So at that point, she went to her old congregation, talked to the elders. Because she didn't have a witness to the abuse, they wouldn't investigate it any further. And she decided to sue the Watchtower.
All right, let's hear from Candace Conti in her own words.
I wasn't going to take the back seat. I wanted to go full steam ahead and expose them for what they really were and the policies and the procedures for what they really were.
After Kendrick had sexually abused Candace Conti, he moved to a town called Oakley, about 60 miles north. When he moved there, the elders at his old congregation had sent a letter to the elders in Oakley to introduce him. And in that letter, they essentially said that he was good with kids, that he was a fine brother, and then they mentioned nothing about child abuse at all. Kendrick ended up marrying a woman in Oakley and went on to molest her granddaughter.
So Trey Bundy, one of the most striking things about your report is the years and years of abuse that are documented in thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of documents at the Watchtower. Now, the court proceedings, and there are many now, have led to a lot of discovery and a lot of resistance by the Jehovah's Witnesses leadership to revealing the documents that they have. Can you describe the breadth of the information that they have that is not revealed?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's important to understand that these policy memos to keep child abuse secret are approved by the organization's governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses. This is seven men who are the spiritual leadership of the organization. So in a court case in San Diego last year, a civil lawsuit by a child abuse victim, they were subpoenaed to produce the longest-serving member of the governing body, Garrett Loesch. He refused to testify. The other piece of evidence that was extremely important that they refused to produce was a list of known perpetrators in their congregations in the U.S. So in 1997, the Watchtower sent a new child abuse memo to all its elders saying that from now on, the elders need to report any known child abusers in their congregations all around the country. So for almost 20 years, the Watchtower has been collecting detailed information on who's a child abuser in a congregation, where are they, how old were the victims, all this information. They've been collecting it all this time, and now in court, they refuse to give it up.
And Trey Bundy, it's not only that. The church elders now on appeal, as I understand it, have made the argument that their First Amendment right to religious freedom is being violated by all of this.
Right. So one of the frequent defenses the Watchtower uses is a First Amendment defense. And essentially what they're saying is judicial examination of their spiritual beliefs and practices would violate their First Amendment rights under the Free Exercise Clause. So that's why it's important when you look at the memos to see that they've wrapped their policies, these very bureaucratic policies and protocols, they've wrapped them in Bible verse. So in court, they say that their spiritual beliefs and practices are in play every step of the way, and that that violates the First Amendment.
And certainly, as we've seen other horrific sex scandals around the country and around the world, both within the Catholic Church and at places like Penn State and the football program with Jerry Sandusky, it has been made clear that being aware of this type of abuse and saying nothing to authorities is a crime and is punishable. And that accountability hasn't happened here.
No, it hasn't. And part of that has to do with the laws around mandated reporting. So you've got about 42 states in the United States that mandate clergy to report any suspected or known child abuse to the authorities. But more than 30 of those states have what's called a clergy penitent privilege, which is a loophole. Basically, it says if you're a clergy, you're a mandated reporter. But if somebody comes to you, for instance, a confession in the Catholic Church tells you something spiritually and confidentially, then you're exempt from the mandated reporting law. And that's something that seems to be used a lot in these cases.
A new report on a culture of concealment and denial of sexual abuse within the Jehovah's Witnesses. Trey Bundy, reporter for Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. Thank you so much.
Thank you.